This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show Series 5, Episode 15, Super Skill Yourself. It's a packed Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This week we talk about Peter Moore's appointment and what that means for coaching senior players at all levels. We look at spin bowling versus batting skills, and we discuss how to help a young fast bowler improve her technique, even if the coach has no technical experience. All that and more coming up on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, your guide to playing or coaching, or playing and coaching better cricket. My name is David Hinchliffe, and I'm looking after things here on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. But joining me on the line, as always, it's Mark Garraway, a man who's knee-deep in cricket balls at the moment, by the sounds of it, at Millfield School. How's it going, Garraz?
It's actually thigh-deep on me, mate, because I'm a little bit short on the leg. But I've got lots of cricket balls around me.
And also on tour at the moment, a little early season jaunt to a few different schools to see how his side compares. It's Sam Lavery. Welcome, Lavers. Where are you at the moment?
I'm currently just post Premier Inn breakfast, so I've been through that. But Oxford is the location, so we're about to head off to Magdalen College, which will be nice.
And as we know, no wides have been bowled so far.
Absolutely none. We don't bowl wides at PGS. In fact,
well done, mate. Well
we
done.
We didn't bowl any wides, but we bowled two not waist high no balls, two head high no balls yesterday. So that's how we get our extras in, through intimidation.
Anyone who's brave enough to go into the net against me while I was trying to teach myself how to bowl with the sidearm in the last couple of weeks has also experienced that. but I've got myself sorted now. I can get a good lick going now, and that's one of your tips, Garraz, isn't it? Bowl with a sidearm instead of just flicking it.
Yeah, give it a go. And your experience last week with it is exactly the same as everybody else, mate. You've got to crack on through, and it's a skill like anything else that we learn. Get in there, give it a go, and before you know it, you'll be landing it on length and making people hop around.
Yeah, it's working very nicely for me now. I can pretty much, I bowl a bit far outside the off stump with it at the moment, but that's much better than either putting it on my toes or throwing it over the net, which happened more than once. Anyway, we've got a lot of coaches here, and of course, there's been a big coaching appointment this week, so I thought we could discuss some of the issues around the appointment or the reappointment of Peter Moore's to the England job, which is one of the biggest coaching jobs in the world. And I guess it's a slightly different coaching job from the kind of thing that we do, and certainly the kind of thing that any coaches are listening to this, but it's still a coach. So I'm thinking, what can we learn about a coach coming in, dealing with senior players, and what approaches work best when you're coming into a side which has got senior players in it, and you need to make an impact when those players don't necessarily need to develop any skill sets like you would if you were coaching the club under 11s. Garraz, what do you think?
Well, I was there the last time Pete came into the England setup, and it was a very different room, very different environment, very different makeup of the team, and in many ways, I think by his own admission, that the timing wasn't quite as optimal as it is now, really. Pete's got a magnificent record of picking sides up, of building sides over a period of time. He's done it both at Sussex and he's done it at Lancashire with great success, and also building fantastic bridges and relationships with specific leaders, namely Chris Adams down at Sussex and now Glenn Chappell up at Lancashire. And I think he's got the opportunity to do exactly that with Alistair Cook, who's going to be the captain in two of the formats that he's going to take charge of. So the crucial bit is that captain coach relationship. When you're 10 months on the road every year with each other. That's got to be rock solid. And as everybody knows that followed it last time and have read the outtakes, when Pete lost his job with England and moved to Lancashire, that there was never really a relationship established between his then captains and himself. And I think by his own admission, he sees this as a much more opportune time to go in. So when you say senior players, obviously the most important senior player is a captain, and at international level or even at club level, when you're inheriting an experienced side with some experienced cricketers, I think the starting point from a coaching perspective is to build that relationship with the captain. And fortunately, in Pete's case, Cookie and himself got on brilliantly when Pete did the first time round. And I've got absolute faith that both he and his new assistant, Paul Farbrace, who's also a fantastic coach and a fantastic man, will do a brilliant job in building a concrete culture with Alistair Cook.
Well, far be it from me, Lavers, to compare Burridge Cricket Club to the England side, but there are certainly parallels. You've been a coach of the senior sides at Burridge, and Peter Moores is going to coach the England side. What parallels do you think you can draw that other coaches can learn from the way that Peter Moores might do things?
I think there are still, as Gareth said, there are still relationships that needs to be managed, and that's the same whether it's international cricket or club cricket. You need to make sure you've got clear objectives that you and your senior players and your captain share. Again, that doesn't change whether it's professional sport or amateur sport. You still need to be focused in the same direction, and at times really there needs to be clearer communication channels at club cricket, really, because you're not forced to spend time with each other, you're not there around each other all day long, and the communication aspects maybe not quite so easy when some people train once a week or maybe don't train at all. So installing communication happens quite naturally if you get the right people at a professional level working together, it can be quite a fruitful operation. It can work very well, but in a club environment that communication can be difficult. So I would look at that key element of coming in and making sure that you establish clear objectives with your senior players and your captain straight away. The other thing that's very similar is the time commitment that people can put into the format of cricket you're playing. Obviously, with England, there are commitments to counties, there are commitments to Test cricket, One Day cricket, 2020 cricket as well. And in a different way, but people have got different commitments in lives as club cricketers. So again, it's managing expectations of how much can we commit to this form of the game, or how much can we commit to the role you're going to play for England, as opposed to committing to the role you're going to play for your other side and counties. And similarly with club players, you'll get guys who are playing different roles with first team and second team when they're on the fringe. So there's lots of crossovers in the way they happen, in the manner in which club cricket and international cricket can be perceived. Obviously, the scale of the event, as it were, is very, very different. But there's still key skills as a coach that you need to have in terms of planning and organisation and communication, which are relevant all the way through.
Well, you need to have somebody, Sam. I think that's a great point. You need to have somebody who has got a track record of developing people over a period of time, not just over, you know, a 6-week period. And also, I'm a believer, having been there, is that you need to have support staff and coaches that have grown up children and children that have got their own lives outside of having to traipse around the world after their dad, because that's not sustainable. And both of Pete's children now are at an age where they have a degree of independence in their lives, and that will make it far easier for him than being away from home for 8-10 week periods away from the family than it was before. Players can absorb it because there are different ways for them to get around it. But yeah, I remember being away on tour, and then our families would come over, and of course you train in the morning. In the afternoon, the support staff are doing their thing and trying to work out ways to make it better, whilst the players rightly get their time off and can do the family thing. It's very difficult to manage young families and be a head coach of a national team. And I think that was one of the challenges that Andy Flower faced, and one of the reasons why somebody like Gary Kirsten didn't put himself up for the role.
I wonder if enough people appreciate that as well, that the coach's time is very different to the player's time, isn't it? It's not go out, turn up, have your session structured for you, and then have maybe part of a group session, then you're done for the day. There's so much more planning time and preparation time, setting up time, packing up time that goes into it, and then discussion and selection and various other things which the players simply aren't involved in. And maybe it's something that's becoming more obvious as time goes on, that the coach's role, and especially given their age and children and things like that, is more of a factor now.
No, it definitely is, mate. And I think that people can relate to that at home, can't they? I'm sure that if any wives or girlfriends of coaches at club level can relate to it at home as well.
Absolutely.
Because I heard my mum's moans for about 40 years with my dad. And then obviously, from my own perspective, when I was doing my coaching as well, you know, I'd only get to see them when they came on tour with us to watch some games, to be honest. And that was often when I was waving to them in the crowd after hitting a few balls out in the middle. So I totally get that. It's definitely, you know, it's a passion of a person, but it's very difficult to bring up a young family around an international coaching environment.
We haven't really mentioned some of the more traditional. We've talked about a lot of what are the lesser known, perhaps, or the lesser traditional parts of coaching. We haven't really talked about the traditional parts of coaching, the tactical elements, the technical elements. How important are those elements in a modern coach's toolbox?
I think they're important, but they probably slide, particularly the technical side of things, slides in the main, and it doesn't always happen, you know, but in the main it slides a little bit down the list, because as Sam and yourself have both mentioned already, that the players come into international cricket with an element of technique which has stood them in good stead, which has got them to that level. And really the last thing you want to be doing is rediscovering or working too heavily on your technical game when you get to that higher echelon of the matches, because, you know, it's tough to do that. And really, it's about the mentality. It's a lot about the tactics. It's a lot about working out how to manage yourself within a different environment, which has, you know, 100, 200 press people going around the world with you, that every ball's on television, that it's on the internet. It's a different life to being a county cricketer or a state cricketer, where you have smaller crowds and less invasion of privacy, really. So it's all of those things that contribute towards it. And I think the more experienced people have got around international cricket, probably the more they can help you. And that's why they've gone with Farbrace and Moores as the head coaches. And I should imagine there'll be a lot more international experienced people joining their support staff in the coming weeks. Occasionally you get challenges like Stephen Finn encountered over the winter, where it does become something technical, and he's somebody who is very technical minded, and he's benefited hugely from working alongside coaches such as Kevin Shine and Richard Johnson, who, as well as doing all of the other things, have a slant towards technical skills and technical development. So occasionally you get one of those, but my experience in the main is you end up managing cricketers rather than coaching them technically, and it's all about how they then deploy their game and manage all of the distractions outside, which ultimately says whether they're going to be a successful international player or not.
And can you apply that equally if you're talking about senior players at club level as well?
I think a little bit, because they've obviously done it, haven't they? Hence why they're a senior player. They've been there, they've done it, they've stayed in the environment long enough and picked up things naturally along the way. The other thing that you have to consider in club cricket is that you don't have as much time with the players in a coaching capacity as you would do within the international game or the county game as well. So when you do make any technical interventions, it's got to be absolutely on the money, and you've got to be very sure of what you're doing. That's certainly been my experience. And even when I coached at Chard a few years ago, I think technically I probably did two or three bits of work, and most of that was around fielding, and the rest of it was just mindsets and approaches and attitudes and all of those things. So even at club level, I think that's got a relevance to it.
Okay, let's wrap up the introduction with the yes-no round. Three questions that can only be answered yes or no, no matter how much more that we want to say. Here's the first one. Fear is not the enemy. Paralysis is the enemy.
No.
Yes. Second question. Avoid vanilla net at all costs.
No.
Yes. Third question. Hard work really begins at the start of the season.
No.
No. Okay, time now for the mailbag. A couple of questions, and the best question of the week that's sent in wins a prize, which is an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And the first question this week has been sent in by Charles. And it's a long question, a lot of it's background, so we'll start with the question itself, and then I'll give you some of the background. Charles is a spinner, and he says, when he looks towards playing a higher level of representative cricket, he's often overlooked in favour of part-time spinners who don't take wickets or ball economically but can bat in the middle to the top order. So do you think I should be looking to develop my bowling variations or invest more time in becoming more competent with the bat to become more appealing in the eyes of selectors? And just to give you a little bit of background on that, he's a left-arm spinner who uses a stock ball and an arm ball. And he thinks he's managed to develop a carom ball as well, although it's still early days for that. He's a weak batsman, and it causes him to be overlooked for representative duties, as we've discussed. And although he can defend nicely, he doesn't score very quickly. He bats about 8 or 9, and he doesn't score a lot of runs by the time he runs out of partners. So he gets a lot of not outs, which is a good sign. So that's the background information. Do we think we want a guy who is a better spinner and not so great with a bat? Or do we want a guy who's not reaching his potential as a spinner, but slightly better with the bat in order to get selected at a higher level?
Well, I think he's asked a few questions in there, which is good. And I think one of the things he talked about early on was he maybe saw it as being a weakness or a lack of skill in his bowling. But one thing that seems to be really good is the simplicity of his bowling at the moment, is that he's got an arm ball, he can bowl a ball that turns, and he's got a lot of control. And as a left-arm spinner, then that's really, really useful. Obviously, when it comes to the first question he asked, which was developing his carom ball, I'd recommend some isolated practice on that, which sounds technical, but effectively that means sitting in front of the TV and practicing that release away from a bowling scenario. So I'd recommend just trying to develop that as much as you can, and getting the feel for it coming out of the hand, and getting the getting into the rhythm and routine of that ball flicking out of the hand in the way that he wants it to, before he then takes it onto a net or a match situation. But ultimately, the path of the arm is not going to have to change dramatically, so he doesn't have to teach his arms anything new. So it's just developing that new release point. On the bit you touched on there, David, with whether or not we want a middle order part-timer or we want a guy who's a genuine spinner, I think certainly in one-day cricket, the figures are showing to us that spinners the way forward, as we've touched upon in recent weeks, and I wrote about a couple of weeks ago. Spin's becoming a key part of one-day cricket, and obviously you would imagine, and it doesn't state that, but I'd imagine the majority of the cricket he's playing is based around one-day cricket. So having a genuine, definitely look to do. For him, I think it sounds like he needs to have a little bit of communication with the coach and say, look, what role do you want me to play, and what role is going to help me within the side, help me contribute more. He's touched on two options of developing his spin bowling more or developing his batting more, and ultimately he's wanting to develop by adding new skills to his game. I think as a batter, he sounds like he's quite an organised player and he doesn't have a big range of shots. So possibly identifying one or two scoring options would be a really good way to start, and trying to commit to those, develop those through some basic drills and some repetition in a away from the nets, and then getting into the nets after that and trying to experiment with them in there. So he'll have a good idea of the type of bowling and the type of surfaces he plays on and what sort of shots might work. So trying to commit to a couple of options there would be really good. In terms of his bowling, it's difficult to know at what level he's operating and developing this new ball, and it doesn't sound like he's desperately in need of it. So it's going to be a small addition to what he does, possibly. But the main thing, again, it comes back to a bit of communication with the coach and the senior guys around him, and saying, look, I feel like I contribute to this side. I feel like I can perform these jobs well. Where do you feel I'm lacking, or where would you feel I could add to my skill set, or I could add to my contribution to make myself a more prominent or a more pivotal part of this team?
Well, I think he needs to ask himself a question, and I agree with Sam, ask the coaches a question, is where can he have the most impact? So what part of his game is he going to have the most impact on? Now, if that is because the Karen ball's developing, that you just need to keep working on that and then to implement it very slowly in an appropriate environment into the game, which will then make you very selectable, then so be it, because it sounds like you're a good bowler anyway with some options. But if you can add that to it, I'd want impact as a coach, I'll be brutally honest with you. I think most people can bat nowadays. I look back at a couple of our games last week where I had a proper batter going in at number 11 in two of the games. So I'm looking for somebody who can do something a bit different personally. And if that's your bowling that's going to do that, then fantastic. I'm a huge believer in super strengths. So I wouldn't want you to spend too much time, particularly as you quite rightly say here, that you've done pretty well at keeping the ball out and holding an end up and being not out. You've obviously got something. And in many ways, one of the things that I think you can really focus on is persuading the coaches that actually your batting might not be as bad as it's perceived, and try and break down some of those prejudgments that they've got by showing them some stats, by giving them some detail and some evidence to substantiate your argument that actually I'm pretty selectable because I'm bowling well. And also because I'm not going to let you down with the bat. I might not win you a game if we're ever requiring 10 and over, but I'm certainly somebody there that can help you to get 5 or 6 and over by keeping out some good balls and maybe taking up one end whilst a good batter goes at the other. So I'd be more interested in the bowling, to be honest. I think it's ambitious to suggest that you're going to go from batting at 9 or 10 or whatever it was to batting at 6, because it's not just about developing a couple of shots. Batting is about batsmanship as well. It's about understanding of angles and picking up singles and when to go in the over and who you're going to take down as a bowler, and all of those things take up a huge amount of time to become a specialist at. So to me, I'd super strength. Go with your bowling, develop that as much as you can, and persuade the coaches through statistics, which it sounds like you're backing up every time you go out to bat, that actually their perception of your batting isn't right.
And if you're tearing up, taking wickets every week, causing chaos, then even a coach who's dead set on saying, well, I'm not interested in spin, the only spinners I want is going to be a batsman who can turn his arm over a bit, even a coach like that is going to have to look at you and say, well, hang on a minute, this bloke's taking wickets all over the shop at a level below. We've got to at least give him a chance. I think it would be a very close-minded coach who sticks doggedly to his tactics in the face of a player who doesn't fit in with the tactics, but can, as you say, Gareth, cause impact. Okay, let's know how you get on with that, Charles. Hopefully the crux of it is to have that conversation with the coach and try and win him around towards your strength. Next question is from Dan. And Dan is a coach, but he's not a very experienced coach. So he's asking for our advice. And he says, I'm coaching my son's under 15 cricket team, and there's a girl in the team who is by far the best player. She's a fast bowler, and she wants to play professionally. She's told me that when she bowls, she falls away from her target and her wrist is really weak. She says she's inconsistent when she bowls and she would like to increase her pace. I don't know much about coaching cricket, but she's our team captain and she seems to set fields well. One thing I did notice is that when she bowls, as soon as she bowls the ball, her first step is off to the side of the pitch. From what I know, it should be at the stumps, but hopefully you'll be able to help me out. Can you help me improve her bowling, please? So he's not a great technical guy, but he's got a bowler who's got some talent. What can he do?
I'll tell you what he is. He's somebody who listens well and he watches well from that. So I think a little bit of advice about how you go about it now. And actually, you do become a very good technical coach. And as I've said before, the ability to listen to what the player is telling you, which in this case sounds like some fantastic kinesthetic awareness from the bowler herself, And secondly, your own observations of a starting point for any coaching intervention. So firstly, on that, Dan, well done yourself, mate. That's a brilliant start. With that feedback, obviously, we want to train everything going towards a target for as long as possible. We do need to get off the pitch at some point, but obviously there's a time later in the follow through when that can happen. And interestingly, the feedback that you got from your female cricketer was that she felt that she was falling away and her wrist was weak. And often the two go hand in hand, because the wrist there is compensating for something that isn't quite working in the action beforehand. In technical bowling speak, we talk about side flexion, and that side flexion is that the upper half of the body falling away from the target prior to release, which leads to the release position having to compensate to make sure that the ball goes down somewhere near the stumps. And the way that we take it back is to try and find out what the root cause of that is. And often, and it's not the only one, but often the root cause of somebody with side flexion is as they jump in the air to get into their back foot contact when they're bowling, there's often a collapse of the back leg as that back foot comes down, instead of it being nice and strong and pushing you over to your front leg. As a result of that, the body then has to compensate for that bend in the back leg, and normally it shoves off to the offside of a right-hander if you're a right-arm bowler. So that would be the point that I'd have a look at. And one of the best things that you can do at this point is to get some video footage, even if it's just on a phone, Dan, from behind and from the side, and see what's happening with that back leg collapse, and see if it's actually happening. If that's not happening, then you might be, through your own observations and your conversation with the players, work out what's going on. But I'd be fairly sure that there's something going on with the back foot contact that's causing that to happen. There are three main reasons why a back leg will collapse at this point. One of the ones is that they're either running in too fast or too slow into the crease, and they can't control the weight that then goes both through the back leg prior to it going onto the front foot. The most common one is that as the person jumps, instead of jumping towards the target, they jump in towards the stumps, and then the body has to compensate to get everything going back in line. Or the jump is too high, which is a very common thing that we see. So what goes up has to come down, and the inability of the bowler to sustain and manage that back leg through all of that ground force contact causes the back leg to collapse. So have a look at those. It's either run-up speed, it's either jump height, or the angle of the jump. Have a look at those, and ideally we want to be training them to go a little bit lower probably and a bit more direct. And I'll get told off for saying this by a few, but one of the best ways that I've done it with fairly young cricketers is to put up some obstacles that make people to go through in a straighter line. You only have to do it for a little bit of time, and the kinesthetic awareness of either hitting them or just feeling that they're close will often train the body to go in a straight line towards the target. As and when you take those intervention poles or the bean bags or the markers on the floor or whatever the case may be away, and then you see whether they can sustain that straight line. And in my experience, that's been a pretty good way of going about it. So it's back leg contact you want to have a look at, see what's happening there, work out which one of the three that I've given you is right, and then train them down a line, and then take those poles away or that intervention away at some point.
I think the often the trickiest part actually is the removal of the assisting obstacles or intervention poles or whatever it is you might be using, because often introducing them and making the adjustments quite easily done actually, and it's then can the bowler sustain what they're doing with the support, without the support, and at what stage do they start to revert back to type and revert back to their old methods once those intervention poles or cones or whatever it is that's being used have been removed. So often the skill is in the subtlety of feeding them back towards match live practice as opposed to being in a fixed drill scenario. Sometimes the change can be made quite quickly, but then getting back to a match situation is quite difficult. But just keep thinking about a line, keep thinking about things travelling forwards,
running towards our target, jumping towards our target and extending forwards with our arms towards our target. One of the things that's talked about a lot these days is trying to reduce the height to a degree. Up and down, pushing and pulling movements can often cause lateral flexion as well. So trying to extend forwards with the arms, especially the front arm. So a forwards push and a backwards pull as opposed to an up and down motion can have less impact on lateral flexion. And also it can create more forwards momentum through the action as well. So Gareth has obviously touched on a number of things there. But often simplicity is what it's about. Is everything pointing and moving forwards? And without obviously sounding like too technical a coach as you are, you more of a new to the coaching world and obviously managing someone very well by the sounds of it. Just try and keep things simple. Use your group around you, as Gareth said. Talk about the basics we're looking for, things moving towards the target, and show the group. And if they can start to identify things, then maybe there are options there to change or develop.
Is there a case for saying, yeah, okay, I filed that away, but we're not going to necessarily work on anything like that until I can develop a little bit more confidence? Or is it a matter of rolling your sleeve and saying, let's get stuck in and let's try and make these changes?
Two things for me. First one is timing. So there are more opportune times to make this type of intervention than others. So if, Dan, you're in the English cricket season, we don't know where you are, or at least I don't know where you are, then it would be something that I probably would press the pause button onto and just go, actually, this is something that we can look at in September. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that, going back to my first bit of my question, if you've got a set of eyes and you know how to use them, which it sounds like Dan has and has done a good job already, if you've got a video camera on the phone, then with this particular player who's come to you and given you that feedback, they are ready to go. They are ready to move and develop themselves technically. So you don't have to motivate that. All you need to be is the eyes and ears, armed with a little bit of information from myself and Sam, and let the player guide you through that process. But I will come back to the first thing that I just said, which is timing. These things don't always just click of a finger, snap back into place. Sometimes they do, and you can be lucky, but other times they don't. So if there's a period of 2 weeks where there isn't a game, or if it's a very busy competition phase and you get to the end of a season, then that might be a more opportune moment. But I think you're armed already, Dan, with a good set of eyes and a fantastic pair of ears that have listened to what your player wants. And you're also lucky enough to be working with somebody who wants to take responsibility for their own development. So to me, you're already ready to take them technically to the next level, armed with a couple of tips from us too.
It's that part of the show where we have 60 seconds and one of the team gets to talk about whatever they want without interruption and without hesitation. This week it's Gareth. So Gareth, over to you for your soapbox.
I'm going to talk this week about how small the world is. And in this day and age of social media and texting and emails and internet and all of those things, it's incredibly, I'm always amazed at how quickly messages come to me from all over the world about cricketers, about what people are doing, what other coaches are doing. And I think this podcast is a great example of that, how we're spreading information. Now, hopefully the information we give is very positive information. But the other day, I was informed by somebody who was on a cricket ground in Cheltenham that there was a coach who was being very critical of my methods of coaching, which was very interesting. And I was kept up to date with what they were saying about me. And you just got to remember that the world's a very, very small place. And also, it's very difficult to be critical of somebody's methods of coaching, because I'd never do it if I've not spent enough time with them. So if you're that person, and I think you might listen to this show, actually, I'd be quite keen on having a conversation with you. So, and we'll do that on a face-to-face basis rather than over the internet.
And on that bombshell, it's time that we wrapped up the show and headed away before any trouble is caused by anybody anywhere. But before we go, we just need to decide on the winner of this week's competition, which is, of course, the online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And we had Charles's question about whether he should become a better bowler, a better batsman, or a bit of both. and we had Dan's question about coaching a fast bowler when you're not too sure about the technical side of coaching. But which one did you prefer this week, Harris?
Well, two great questions. Charles, thank you very much for your detail, and I hope we've given you something to work on. But today, you probably won't be too surprised to know that I'm going to go for Dan's question, because he's demonstrated how he notices and how he listens to the players that he works with, and also a desire to develop himself technically as a cricket coach. So today, Dan, for all of those things, you're the winner.
Congratulations, Dan, and there's plenty of courses available on fast bowling and improving fast bowling technique, so maybe you can have a look at one of those to help you on the path to get all your players better. Now, Gareth, if somebody wanted to send in their question and have their chance of winning the prize and also have their question answered, of course, what would they need to do?
Well, they could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right. We are also all over the social media world. We have a Facebook page, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. We post videos and articles and all kinds of crazy stuff. I put up a motivational poster there the other day, so have a look at that one if you haven't already seen it. And we also tweet away on Twitter at pitchvisionacad. You can subscribe to this show if you want to listen to it every week. You can head to iTunes and do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us in there. And if you don't want to use iTunes, you want to use any other podcatcher, then head over to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link for all the details on how to subscribe. Now, that's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Lavis. Cheers, Gareth.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers, boys. Cheers.